Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ooh. Show them what you're all about. Drag out.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Exposed. I'm your host, Joseph Shepherd, and each week we dive into the lives of those individuals who may or may not have been on a RuPaul's Drag Race franchise. I love doing this pod with you guys every single week. You guys have been like sending very nice messages. I cannot thank you guys so much for all of the support. But I am so excited to announce that today's guest is extremely special. She comes from a season of Drag Race where there was a six-way lip sync all at the same time. It's Honey Davenport.
I'm good. That's me. I'm Honey Davenport. Ow.
Ow. Honey, before we even get into your life, I just need to know your opinion on something.
Okay.
So tonight, before we're shooting this.
Okay. So before
about
you even
to be
you
the said lip sync.
The word tonight, and I have PTSD.
You knew.
PTSD. The moment she said last week, the moment RuPaul said last week, everybody was lip syncing, and I was like, no, not again. Don't do this again. So what do you want my opinion on?
I would love to walk back in time to that moment for you.
Okay.
So you guys end up not winning for the challenge because it's the Mariah Carey and Britney Spears thing.
Mm-hmm.
You are in the bottom with five of your other sisters.
Yeah.
The longest J-Lo dance track plays with hardly any words in it.
I know the original's so much better, but the problem is that now I hear the original every single time I'm at the nightclub, and it consistently reminds me that I lost RuPaul's Drag Race. It's like every time I go to the club, there's a nice, good reminder. J-Lo's Waiting for Tonight plays every single night. There is a dance party everywhere in America. Trust me, I know this. It plays every single, it's like the worst, so amongst
Where
the worst songs.
Tonight?
Yeah.
It's to get eliminated to. The only thing I could think that would be worse is if you got eliminated to Crazy in Love. Like, I think that would be the only thing that would be
awful.
Worse. They can't afford it, so you're lucky.
Watch what happened tonight when we get off. It's one of the songs.
Oh gosh, please. I hope that doesn't happen to anybody. It's so good when like the older seasons when they eliminated people to like Two of Hearts. Like, nobody's playing that shit in WeHo.
Yeah, nobody.
You know? But like, I legit, either someone's performing it every night I'm at the club, or someone is playing it. Some DJ's playing it every night at the club. It used to be a sore subject. Now I find it quite hilarious that I'm the only girl in the whole franchise of Drag Race that it took five girls to eliminate. That's it. Tonight, that might change.
That might change. But let me ask, when you were on that stage and you had to perform, you ended up jumping off the stage, right?
I needed more space. I'm claustrophobic.
You needed more space and you jumped off. And when you jumped off, Rue's face went.
She didn't catch that I jumped into a dip. And that's okay. You know, mama's of a certain age.
Yeah.
she was like, what's that? I think something's wrong with her ankle. She was like, ugh. I'm guessing that's what it was. No, I mean, also like my emotions were heightened. I was trying to do everything that I could possibly think of doing, which I don't know if that makes for the best performance looking back at it. You know, normally when I'm performing, I just like to let people look back at it.
Yeah.
I'm a much more chill person. But in that moment, it was just like kind of like, you know, I was really identifying with the words of the song. Like, I've been waiting for that moment. And it was so much more than performing a J-Lo song. It was like, give it your all. Even if that means like you know, jumping into a dip off the stage, even if that makes Rue make a face, you know.
I rewatched that before I came on here because I just wanted to relive that moment. I have not seen it since that moment. Mm. And I will say to you, there was a lot more chaos than you. Like there were other, that wigs were coming off.
Outfits were coming apart. Other people jumped off the stage that didn't make the cut, but that's okay. it was a lot of things. And I hope that they learned that that was a bad idea.
Oh, yeah.
Because very few people think that that was a great lip sync. The only people who think that was a great lip sync happen to all be my best friends. And
they think that was a good lip sync?
Oh, my gosh. They think it's, like, some of my best friends think it's, like, it's just, like, a huge television moment, and it's so much chaos, and I'm not that chaotic of a performer, so to watch me lose my shit that way, it's kind of like the meltdown. Like, I know.
They just liked it because they like picking fun of you. That's like the height of it.
I like picking fun at me too, so it's all good. Like,
well, let's get into your life. You were born and raised in Philadelphia, right?
That's West Philadelphia.
Oh, West Philadelphia. Mm-hmm.
You got to say the neighborhood because West, you know. Okay.
So born and raised in West Philadelphia. Uh-huh. Let me ask you, I know that when I was doing research on you, there was a lot of, I read that your mom wanted you to rap when you were younger, and you started putting that into your feelings and expressing how your life was at the time. Is that right? Through like poetry?
I was a really awkward, quiet child, like really just different from everybody else around me. There was like, it felt like there was nothing and no one like me. Like there wasn't anything televised. I mean, I'm, you know, of a certain age now, so there wasn't anything queer on television, and there wasn't really any things black on television. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't identify with my like black or queer community, but I didn't have a queer community at all. And my mom really wanted me to like talk more and express myself to her more. And my mom grew up in the like 80s, and she was, you know, a rapper on like the corners with the boys. She was a tomboy, so she used to like rap all the time in the house. And so she like started teaching me how to rhyme, which led to poetry and songwriting, which is my love. But she would, when I would get really quiet and I would hold things in, she'd be like, what if you rap about it? What if you make it rhyme? And then I would be like, well, there's stuff that I don't want to say. And she's like, you're allowed to say whatever you want to, as long as it's musical. And that's how I started writing music.
I love that. Like, she didn't tell you to hold back. That's really, really good.
Yeah, she had to break me on it. Because I was just like, I was one of those kids sitting in the back of the room, like, we should be afraid. He's going to blow up something. Like, like, I was like, we should be afraid of this one. He's holding on to too much, girl.
Get out those lyrics.
Right? Get it out. Let out some steam, you know?
So for those who are watching who don't know what West Philadelphia is like, or was like, I guess, during the time that you were growing up, what was it like growing up?
Well, I mean, it's the hood, and I'm proud of that. Just like most African-American communities, it's steeped in the Black church. And I grew up in a family that's like half Muslim and half Christian. So just tons of religion and God. Wow. Yeah. And I will say this. I have the most loving and supportive and incredible family. They really love me. I'm just a weirdo. Like, I'm just different than them. They've never, ever not loved me for how different I am. It just was very strange growing up, never being able to look at anything or anybody that looked similar or was similar to you. So it's just like, it was just really strange.
You felt like you were just out of the box, like nobody.
I could not wait to get out of there and get to New York. I had cut school in high school. I hope my mom is listening to this. Great. I cut school in high school with my cousin, who actually lives with me now in L.A., one of my best friends in the world. And we cut school and we went up to New York and like hookied and like played around, whatever. We didn't really have any money or anything to do, but we just had enough to take the bus there. And I saw people who dressed different than everybody and people like who were allowed to be themselves. And I was just like, that New York was actually my salvation. Like knowing that it existed was like, there is a place where I can go to that I won't be strange because everybody's fucking weird here. And it really was that. It was that for me for 16 years I lived in New York City after high school. Yeah.
And you went to what, AMDA?
I went to AMDA.
Okay.
So the big old scamda.
When I was in my high school theater, I was like, AMDA. What was your AMDA experience like?
Oh, it was awful. It was terrible. I wouldn't recommend anybody ever going there. And AMDA, if you're listening to this, maybe you should like apologize for how you treated me like a shitty alumni amongst several other people who've had this terrible experience at this overpriced school. You could literally just move to New York and LA and take acting and dance and singing classes anywhere else and not owe thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of dollars afterwards. So my AMDA experience was weird. And every time somebody asks me about it, I like to bring up my musical theater teacher who told me I would never amount to anything and that I'd never be able to get a job, even a chorus on Broadway. And you know what? I make more than them in like 5 minutes on stage now. So fuck off, Philip George.
You know what? Okay, Philip George and I said the same thing before. Mine was Lorraine Cotton. So Philip George and Lorraine Cotton, you have a special place in hell for telling people things and making them come down on themselves.
Right. And to sell that to like an actual teenager. You know, I was a teenager in college. I went to a 2-year school and I graduated at 19.
Wow.
And like to say to a teenager that you're never going to be able to do this, like people become what they're going to become way after 18, 19.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So like, keep going. You ain't got it yet. Like not even you ain't got it yet, but you know what I'm saying? But like legitimately told me that he wasn't giving me good material because he didn't think I was good enough for it and that I was never going to be able to do this.
But look where you are now.
I know.
So you're in New York, you said, for 16 years.
Yeah.
Where did you end up living in New York? Did you live like all over? Was there a certain area?
Well, all over, but my heart belongs to really two places. So all over, because when I first moved to New York, I lived in the Upper West Side where AMDA is, which was hilarious. We weren't allowed to have like boys in our dorm and shit like that. Well, me and my cousin, oh my gosh, we get into so much trouble. We just figured out that I could like scoot him into my dorm building in my suitcase. He could fit into it. So he would come up.
You put your cousin in your suitcase?
Yeah, we would just act like I had like a lot of props to take the acting class, put my cousin in the suitcase and then roll him up into my room. We used to do this on weekends. And so then I would start bringing boys in that way. And then I was like, okay, you're going to get caught. You're going to get kicked out of school for bringing boys in your dorm. So I was like, you got to get your own place. So I moved to Harlem before Harlem was cool, before it was gentrified. It was like, it was so affordable. My rent was $465 in Harlem on 132nd Street. That's how long ago I moved there.
That's cheap.
I was
173rd and Broad the first half of the time that I was there. Mm-hmm. And then I was like 91st and 3rd once I made a little bit more money. Mm-hmm. But that was the most money I think I've ever spent. So to get $400 and something.
Girl, well, I spent most of my time in New York living uptown in Washington Heights and in Inwood. And that's actually where I like started to develop my drag at to a legendary bar named No Parking, which was my heart. So I had a real connection with Washington Heights and, you know, the food is fucking bomb. Mm-hmm. And the Dominican dick is... Girl, I can say dick, right?
Yeah, you can say dick. Okay. You can say anything.
I guess I've said worse than that already.
Yeah.
And then after I made a little more money and I became a drag superstar in New York, I moved to Hell's Kitchen and I did the whole Hell's Kitchen thing so I can be around all the gays. And the dick was even better. but that's just because it was in abundance. You know, every gay is right there.
And then literally you have every tourist coming because they want to see the gay nightlife and everything. So they're coming through.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they were coming through.
Oh, they were coming through.
Oh, they were coming through.
So you're doing drag. And I know that I read that your name came from a misspelled signature by RuPaul.
Yeah, so this is in the beginning. Like, I had done drag a couple of times, like actual full-on drag, but I was mostly like dancing and pumps. And with my brother, one of my besties, his name's Antoine, we had a group called The Hunties. And we used to perform, we actually started out because we used to perform backup for Peppermint. That's what my intro to drag
really?
Was. Yeah, I met Peppermint at a nightclub in New York called Therapy. And I was just there getting my life, sipping.
Did Therapy die or did Industry die?
Therapy died. It's okay. Hush now, and it's incredible. And it looks really, really phenomenal. All except for, like, there's one wall on the second floor that has, like, black fur on it. And I was like, y'all lost inspiration. But the rest of the bar is, like, stupidly gorgeous. just my 100% review. But Therapy, I was dancing at Therapy, and Peppermint came up to me and was like, hey, would you like to be in my performance at Lincoln Center? And I'm 21 years old, and I'm like, fuck yeah. And so we, like, danced with Peppermint, and then we started, like, sort of doing our own thing. We called ourselves the Hunties, and we would do, like, performance drag competitions and things like that. Performance competitions, there were tons in New York. And my friend decided he didn't want to do that. His, like, musical theater career was picking up, and he was too grand to work in the good old nightlife. Had he known he would stick to it, he made more money. gotcha. But so that started a lot of things. And I lived across the street from Sahara, and we were really close. That's how I met my drag mother, Deja Davenport. She was Sahara's best friend. So back it up. How I got my name. So I'm with Sahara. I lived across the street from her. And it's around the time that she was on Drag Race, and she took me. I think she hadn't been announced yet, but she had been done filming. And RuPaul had just released her second book. And I went to a book signing from RuPaul, and I asked her to sign this book to the Hunties, my dance group. And Mama, I don't know if she had heard the word Hunty before. At that point, it was still new. not that I try to read RuPaul. I really wish that I could be her, so I don't want to read her at all. but she signed the book to Honey. And I got a booking from a club that wanted to book the Hunties. And it was like maybe our second booking ever. And it was for like a decent amount of money. And I was looking at my account at 21 years old and going mm-hmm. like, you have no money and they want to see the Hunties. So I was like, a group has a different name now. It's Honey. There's no T's.
It's just the one Honey.
It's just the one honey. And Deja Davenport, my drag mother, who I had met through Sahara, really got me together and made me a Davenport.
Wow. And then the rest was history.
Mm-hmm.
So were you in New York at the time that you had applied for Drag Race? Because I know that you said, what, 8 times before you got on? 8?
8 times.
Were those first 7 times, did you get further and further? Or was it that 8th time was just like, bam?
I guess I can spill this tea. I say it all the time. So I hope, it would wonder if I'm in trouble for this. Like, call me and tell me that I shouldn't say it. But just call me for something, please. I think that of my 8 videos, 7 of them were a piece of shit. Now, the 8th one was not the one that was great. The 7th one was great. So, because I went back and I was talking to Rakim Sakura about this mm-hmm. just last night. I went back and watched them and, like, I look fugly. And it was like, I was really trying some hard things and it was not right. And, like, the first 6 of them were just, like, awful. And then the 7th one was just like, that's the ticket. That's everything. And I did get far and I didn't get on the show for season 10. And then season 11 rolled around and I was like, you know, that was really hard. I did it the right way this time and I think I need a break, mm-hmm. you know? And so I wasn't going to audition for season 11. I was just like, I had just won Miss Paradise, which is a prestigious title in New York, New Jersey. And I really wanted to focus on being a good Miss Paradise. I sometimes feel like I sucked at being Miss Paradise because I went on Drag Race. but they love me, so it's fine. And I got a call from casting. They had seen my season 10 tape again. And they were just like, hey, are you not submitting a tape because they're due in 3 days and we haven't gotten an application from you? And I was like, oh yeah, no, I'm taking this year off. I'm too cool for school, basically. And they were like, oh, that really sucks because this could have been your year. And I'm like, so wait, the casting for Drag Race just called me and said that I should apply? Well, then I'm a dummy if I don't make a tape in 3 days. So the very last tape was like, it was the most honest thing that I think that I've ever, not ever done, but it was the most honest tape of all of the tapes because I had nothing to work with. I had nothing to set up, nothing to plan, nothing was planned out. I just said, Well, for the next 3 days, or next two, because it was due in 3 days and take a day to edit. For the next 2 days, I'm just going to get in drag. I'm going to make some costumes because I don't know what I'm going to wear for this tape. I'm going to just figure it out. And I made it in 2 days. Wow. And it was what it was. It wasn't my season 10 audition tape, but it was what it was. And it was really honest. It was really honest. And I see why I didn't get on all of those other times. And I also see why sometimes people get in on and you're like, how did she get on? Like, that is not even the greatest drag, girl. But like, you can always tell those people are like the most honest, truthful, real people. And that's what they're looking for on a reality TV show.
When you say honest in your 11 tape compared to your 10 or the ones mm-hmm. before, what do you mean by that? How did you change?
Well, you know, and in a way, I've even changed more so since then. I've grown into this more since I made that tape. I think before and even during the filming of Drag Race, I've always had a clear idea what the package that I was selling was. That's why I've been doing, I think, a good job, pat myself on the back at selling it. I've always been very clear what I was selling. But my audition tape for season 11 was not selling Honey Davenport. It was like, that's what it is, you know? And actually going back and watching that and watching some of the seasons as they progress, not just the one that I was on, but watching other girls on it too after I've been on it, it's helped me tone down my pitch of Honey Davenport, because every like, my mind is a consistent creation machine. So I'm always, even in my friendships, they're like, why do you pitch us a project every week? Why is this a new thing? You know, like, and so I'm always trying to create mm-hmm. something. And all of my tapes before were me trying to show how I create things. And I just really had no time to do that. So it was just like, this is what it is.
It was the basics.
It was the basics. And the lesson that I've gotten from that, and the lesson that I've gotten from watching seasons of Drag Race since I've been on Drag Race, is that me at my basic is enough.
Yeah.
You know?
That's an interesting thing to say.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times people are total opposite. You know? Yeah. Like, I need to be totally 100% extra than what...
Yeah, I'm not, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I got you on the show.
Yeah.
You walked in the workroom.
Yeah.
You see these girls.
I walked there and I was there for like at least 5 seconds.
I mean, you made it to three episodes.
I made it to three episodes and I came back for a makeover challenge.
Yes.
You know.
I know that I also read, and I was looking into, you said that during the time you were going through very hard time, correct?
Whew, it was the worst time. That was the other part of it too. So in the lead up to winning that pageant that I won, Miss Paradise, my mentor, one of my drag mothers, I had a tumultuous relationship with my drag mother, Deja, and we're good friends now. You know, we worked on. I fucked up, not her. I had a friend who like took me in and under their wing, and they were helping me get ready for this pageant. And one of my drag mothers, Michael Perez, Monica Storm, was a really famous, or is a really famous evening gown designer. And the reason for all of my pageantry and everything, all of that was because of them. And 2 days before the pageant, he had an aneurysm in his frontal lobe.
Wow.
So even getting my stuff done for the pageant, there was like one garment that didn't get finished, and then another friend stepped in and made for me, and I still won, so hey. on top of that, I was homeless. I guess that's the bigger thing, right, than yeah. where my drag was. I was homeless. I was sleeping on friends' couches, and I was separated from my partner and my cat because we couldn't all go to the same place. And yeah, I had just been diagnosed with bipolar. And like, it was just like,
it was when it rains, it pours.
I was like, I don't have no money for this. I don't have no place to live. I can't see my man and my cat. Like, you know, like, it was a lot. And so it was definitely not something that I wanted to do at that part of my life. But I am in some way really happy that like, at what I think is so far in life, my worst mental health moment has been broadcast on national television. And the only thing that we saw was that I jumped off a stage and fell down crying. Like, great, girl, trust me. It was far worse than that in here.
Like, what was your mind like during that time? Were you beating yourself up? Was it?
Total just like, I mean, I still do this to this day, and I'm sure that all of us to some level do. I deal with consistent self-doubt. My inner saboteur has a megaphone. Like, it is loud. Mm-hmm. And I even said that tons of times at Drag Race and you know, unaired things, as RuPaul was like, you know, girl, that's the devil. You're beautiful. You're great. And then sitting there like, I felt like shit the whole time I was there. You couldn't convince me I was doing anything good. And I felt like that little kid in West Philadelphia. I felt like strange and different and awkward and weird the whole time I was there. Yeah, I don't even know how we got there. You're like digging in my life. What are you, fucking Barbara Walters?
Of course we're digging in. No, I think that the inner saboteur thing is so interesting because it didn't take me, it took me a very long time for myself to understand that I'm setting myself back. Mm-hmm. And I know that's a weird thing to say. There's so many times like RuPaul or somebody like, you know, if you can't love yourself, how the hell you love somebody else? Okay, cool. It's words. And that's how I take it.
Every time she says that, I just think about how many men I've loved so much more than me. Like, I'm like, I love this bitch so much more than me.
Right? And you put everybody else's opinions first. Mm-hmm. You put everything coming down to it first. Like when I put out videos, I'm always like, oh my gosh, what's this person gonna think? What's this person gonna do? And then I just started getting to the point where, why does it even matter? Like, if you're living your own authentic life, people are going to see it and they're going to see the happiness in you.
Right.
And that's where it goes at the end of the day.
And you know what? People can relate to that.
Yeah.
People can't really relate to, hi, like that doesn't work. People can really relate to, that is a lot like me. And as somebody who grew up without seeing somebody who was a lot like them, I, you know, in my work now, I find that it's so important to put so much more of myself into it because I do see queens all of the time who are like, oh, bitch, look, she's inspired by Honey Davenport. What? You know? So it's because I'm not afraid to be myself. And when you're not afraid to be yourself, you allow other people, especially the ones like you, the space to be themselves. And that's really important.
Yeah. And when people can see a representation of themselves on television, on the internet, and wherever, it creates, like, I guess you would say, like, the person kind of blooms. Like, mm-hmm. The other, like, I'm on the spectrum, so I have a lot of, like, social things and anxiety and stuff that comes with it. And I've never seen anybody on a television program that I could relate to until literally about 6 months ago, and a show came out about autism, and it was like, I was like, oh my gosh, that person right there. That's exactly. And in that moment, I was like, I'm not the only one anymore. And now I feel okay.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
That's all we need.
That's all we need.
We just need to relate.
That's really all it is. And I think that that's one of the beauty of reality TV. They do cast all of these like types of characters, you know what I'm saying? But it's the small nuances and people that we discover on these journeys that make them relatable to all of us. And a great reality TV show is good at sharing those stories and really exposing to people that people like them exist.
Yeah.
And I think Drag Race does a good job of that.
Yeah. I will say they do a good job. I will say, though, I hear too many sad stories that involve like parents and stuff. And I think for me, like I know seeing those things is really great, but there's only so many of those stories that you can put in before like there might be something else that you miss that person. Like, you know?
Right. You know, it is always a part of our queerness, our relationship with our family. It's a big question that we ask, that we're always asked, like, how was it coming out?
Yeah.
How was it, you know, growing up? You know, like, so I understand how much of that has to be consistently explored on this television show because it's such a big part of our makeup.
That's so true.
As queer people, you know?
Yeah. And I think one of the things that RuPaul's Drag Race does very well is that it is giving people the place to be able to tell their stories. And now we have what? A cast that now includes 5 trans girls. And it's like, wow, like we're getting here. Also, Carrie Colby, I think that Carrie Colby is like a godsend to everybody and helping people discover themselves. Mm. I said before, I was like, I would love for her to be like behind the mirror of RuPaul's Drag Race, and every season she just comes in and helps people figure out who they are as an individual. Because there's something about her light. I'm like, she does it.
Yeah.
She lets people see who they really are.
She's got the light.
She's got the light.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the light that went out when you got off Drag Race.
The one that I cashed into, or the one?
How did it feel? Because I think that you were not in the bottom the first two times.
Mm-mm.
So for a third episode to come around, you probably were not even anticipating being where you were.
I didn't think that it was going to be a bottom thing for me. And I really was hoping that it wouldn't have been, because the first week we had to make something. And like, I was really proud of what I put together as a package for my runways. I think the world was really proud, and they after they watched it afterwards too. I was hoping to get the show more of that. And I didn't have money to create it. So I borrowed so much money from so many people. Some of them turned out to be scammers and things like that. And it's craziness. But I was in so much debt. And so during my elimination, all it just felt like was that I just wasted all of that.
Wow.
And that I was never gonna make it back or figure it out. Because, you know, an early elimination really doesn't set you up for the life that I have right now. And I'm really lucky and blessed and privileged, because a lot of girls have stood in my shoes and went home third, and like, welcome back to your home bar for $25 more.
Yeah.
And that's the story of your life, you know? And that's fine. And that's, you know what? The thing about it is, if I get to continually do drag for the rest of my life and love it the way that I love it, I'm happy. It is a privilege and a blessing that I have YouTube shows and a podcast coming out and all these other things that, and traveling and tours and music, tons of music. A lot of the girls who go home in my position don't get that kind of exposure and those kind of projects, which is what I really did Drag Race for. Like, I really did Drag Race for that.
What would you say sets you apart from the other people that do get out third that may not be at the level that you are, or be going back down to hometown bars and stuff? What was it about you?
Well, what my sisters always say, and this is generally known, you can ask just about anybody in the whole fucking Drag Race franchise, I'm probably the hardest worker. I'm a really fucking ball-busting hard worker. Drag is my love. I wake up just about every day with it as a part of my focus. And it is, I love creating. And I don't just mean doing drag. I like direct music videos for other queens. And I, you know, every single day I'm working and honing and crafting my love, my passion. And not that everybody doesn't do that, but like, I don't know that anybody goes as hard as I do every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you get a thrill from being creative?
Yeah, until I'm exhausted.
When you are crafting everything, when you are writing song lyrics, when you end up putting out, you know, your videos, how much of the creative process is you versus others?
I am a tyrant.
Really?
I believe in collaboration so much. Actually, there's nothing that I've ever done, like since Drag Race, that wasn't in some way, shape, or form collaborative. Mm-hmm. I just released an album of collaborations. My team and I, we create together, but I have a real strong say in everything. And if you try to take my say away from everybody,
but that's what makes the things the best, you know, when you have a vision for yourself and you're so strong about that vision and you don't want anybody else to change it.
Mm-mm.
That is when you know you have something too.
Yeah. The last piece that I actually wrote, it's called Love Is God. It's the EP that I just released with Manila,
yes.
Tammy Brown and Lala Ree and Jackie Cox and Kevin Aviance on it. It was written to be a short movie musical. And I got the funding for it and like signed the contracts with everybody for the funding to do it. And then like 2 days before we were supposed to shoot, the person who was funding the project pulled out.
No.
Yeah. And my team had to convince me that I should still release this project. It wasn't going to be my vision of it anymore. So the way that Love Is God came out, and it's still coming out because there's still more music videos coming from it, it just wasn't how I saw it. And like, it felt like killing a child,
yeah.
You know, like, I have a really hard time getting off it when the vision changes in any way, shape or form, even if it's not my fault, even if it's like, well, there's $5 left in the account, girl. So
yeah,
you ain't making no more music videos.
I feel you 100% on that, because when I was gearing up to shoot my video, I wanted the first scene to take place in a makeshift Blockbuster. I wanted them to make a Blockbuster, and I found a Blockbuster sign. I ended up putting down some money on it, got this thing, everything, and then my director called and was like, this isn't going to work. We're probably just gonna have to like cut this. And I was like, and when somebody says that to you, it doesn't, like, it takes, you just, ooh.
You know, my acting teacher in college used to say, the greatest artists can kill their babies. And I used to think, that is just a terrible fucking thing to think and say. Yeah. But it is like killing a child of yours. It's like, ouch, this is my beautiful creation. I can't imagine that it's like killing an actual child. And I don't want to make that comparison, because not in today's world, they'll bury me. But, you know, I love the kids, girl. But yeah, like it is like it's killing a part of yourself that you created. And the only thing that's similar that I can imagine is like, you know, a child.
Yeah. Everybody that comes on this show, I always ask them to expose something that happened behind the scenes of Drag Race that didn't make it to air. It can be happy, exciting, scandalous, whatever you want. But what is something that never made it to air that you wish would have?
Something that never made it to air that I wish would have. You know, that, can I give you two?
Yeah, give me two.
Let's do it. Okay, can I give you two? Okay, the first one is my message on the mirror mm-hmm. was never aired.
Really?
Yeah, my message on the mirror. If you go to the episode of mine, it's not aired. I don't know why. Maybe they had to cut it. They were like, her message is fucking boring, girl.
What did you write? Was it bad?
I wrote, no matter what, let the world see your heart. I hope you saw mine. And they didn't air it. So that, I wish didn't get scrapped. And I mean, that's kind of lame, though. That's like, you could have wrote like, you know, I like boobs. It would have been better.
You could have just said, you know what? I literally wrote on the wall, fuck all you bitches. But like, it's gone on.
That
everybody would have believed you.
That would have went
that
on.
That would have gone
That would have got on, though. And the other thing is that the episode that I was eliminated in, when we were on the runway, RuPaul looked at me and she said, has anybody ever told you how much you look like Donna Summer? And she like went on for like 10 minutes nonstop about how I look like Donna Summer and what Donna Summer numbers I should perform. And like, then she sent me home.
She said,
should have did Donna Summer. That should have been your runway. That's what I saw for you. So if I ever come back on Drag Race, I'm just walking into the workroom as Donna Summer. Like, where's it gonna be?
You should. You totally should. And you should come in with a mirror that has your message on it.
Right.
You're just mirror all over.
Right.
Would you go back if you were asked?
Yeah, I love opportunity. I think that I said this when I had my final interview for the season I was cast on for season 11. I said to the producer on the phone, I said, why would you want to do Drag Race? And I said, I think it is the biggest billboard for drag queens. Like, more people look at this than anybody else. And I think that the drag that I do is worth people looking at.
Yeah.
And any more chance for more people to see what I've been up to and what I've been creating, not because I have desires to be more famous. I'm very happy with my life. I couldn't imagine. I honestly couldn't imagine that it would be this way. Mm-hmm. But if I had a chance to show more people what I create and what I can do, I'd love that. I absolutely would love that.
Yeah. I love that too. And yeah. I want you to talk a little bit more about that as we are, you know, coming to a close. But what is up with everything that's going on? You have Love is God, right?
Love is God just came out. We'll be dropping more music videos from it coming this summer. My YouTube show, The Fuck, I can't say yet, but just signed to a major network.
Wow.
I know.
Exciting.
That's exciting. And I have an awesome new podcast that is in development, but we've recorded the first episode, so I can talk about it now. Doing a new podcast called The Wake and Bake with Jasmine Masters.
Oh my gosh, are you going to be high?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes. With Jasmine Masters.
One of my favorite things to do, and this is why it came about, one of my favorite things to do is watch Jasmine Masters on her live getting stoned in the morning while I'm getting stoned in the morning. She lives 10 minutes away from me. I could just go there, but I'd rather watch her live and like be... And so like I told her, I was like, I always just like watch you, and you know, like, and then she's like, girl, we should do something. So we do, you know, we were sitting around in my crib and we were like, all right, get out the microphone, let's you know make our first version of The Wake and Bake, where we discuss very random topics and stonery topics.
Yes.
What your favorite munchies should be this week, because that changes. You know, our favorite strands of weed currently, because that changes.
That changes.
You know, it's a lot, you know, how this album makes me feel stoned as opposed to how it makes me feel not stoned. Like, it's wow. Very much stoner conversation for the beginning of your day. And the goal of it is, you know, I wake up in the morning and I take a solid hour to myself. I have my coffee. If I'm getting stoned, then I have a wake and bake joint. I don't wake and bake every day. Mm-hmm. But I do think that it's appropriate sometimes. I have shit to do. I can't do it every day. But you know, and when I have my wake and bake, I like to have something thought-provoking, but, like, not too thought-provoking.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, turns my brain on, but doesn't, like, make me think too deep. And that is what this show is. And it's fun. And every single thing that Jasmine Master says out of her mouth could make me pee my pants. Like,
seriously.
So it's wild.
She, I will say, when I was first starting the show 3 years ago, she was my third or fourth guest, and we had talked, and I was so excited because she was gonna come and drag. We had planned this out. Jasmine walks in the door without any drag on. Looks like she came up the street. She's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I have to go to my friend's proposal. So I didn't do it. And at that moment, I was like, crushed. I was like, Jasmine.
No.
Jasmine.
It only takes her 15 minutes, girl.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, wait, she should pull a wig somewhere.
Last week, she walked into, we were doing a gig in Oxnard. And she walked in at, the gig was supposed to start at 7:30. She walked in at 7:27 out of drag. And she said, well, honey's going to have to host this. And I was sitting there like, I fully just had an edible. And I was just like, that is a bad idea. Girl, you need to get in drag. And she like got in the quickest drag. It took her less than 20 minutes to be fully painted in pads, in tights, in hair, nails, shave in under 20 minutes. She's Wonder Woman.
Oh, my goodness.
She's Wonder Woman. She's incredible.
Well, it's been absolutely incredible having you here.
Thank
and
you.
Chitting with you and chatting with you. Mm. And then I think that we should do a little pod to go more extensive. So,
okay.
Like, I think that I'll call you up and then we can go over Zoom. We can go into studio, whatever we want to do. And we can keep talking about Honey Davenport, because
I like talking about Honey Davenport.
I love talking about Honey Davenport.
Yay.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank
you. Where can everybody find you on the socials?
You can find me at Honey Davenport Official on Instagram, where I'm shadow banned and have not gained a single follower for a year and a half. I know, isn't that weird? I've had the same following for a year and a half. We think it's because of people who were aggressively tweeting BLM. It could be that, but whatever. You can find me at honey_Davenport on Twitter, which is mostly where you can see under my clothes, because most of my Twitter is my ass. let's be real.
And then you have, you said more videos coming out. You have Wake and Bake coming out soon.
Wake and Bake, the podcast, coming out soon. And all of my incredible content from my YouTube show, The Fuck, and my YouTube show, Trade, are on my YouTube channel, Honey Davenport Official. And that is a deep, dark hole of, like, the craziest, stupidest content and some of the most fun music videos you'll ever find.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Exposed, dragged out here by The Dip. Make sure to follow us on all things social at Joseph A. Shepherd and at The Dip. That's The D-I-P-P. And also, I would love if you guys could join me and the community tab over on thedip.com. You may be wondering what that is. Well, I love reading all of your comments, all of your opinions, and everything that you guys have about my podcast and YouTube show. But this is actually the place where you guys can join the conversation with me on the community tab on the Dip. Make sure if you want to do that, if you want to like chit chat about Honey Davenport, you want to chit chat about should we change the All-Star rules? What should we be doing? Head on over to thedip.com and enter code GUAC, that's G-U-A-C, for 90% off. It just comes out to $6 a year. It's a big community of all your favorite reality TV shows with some of the biggest reality fans. And we have a lot of great guests that always come through on so many different podcasts. So make sure to check that out at thedip.com. Until next time, I'm Joseph Shepherd. Thank you all. Bye.
Expose yourself. Ooh. Show them what you're all about. You're right.